Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Say hello to a new era of mental health care. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space. Your Cerebral therapist or prescriber will outline a customized plan with clear milestones along the way so you can get to feeling your best. With Cerebral, you're not alone in your mental health journey. We're here to empower you to live a fulfilling life. So take that first step towards a brighter future and sign up today at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code WONDERY to get 15% off your first month. Offer only valid on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. Offer ends July 31st, 2024. See site for details.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 468. All right, my schedule is evened out. At midnight is in, we're in it now, week three. A lot of good guests this week. Al Madrigal, Rob Hubel, Weird Al, Brian Posehn, Sean O'Connor, Julie Klausner, John Daly, Horatio Sanz. It's gonna be a fantastic week on At Midnight, and I'm so happy to have like a regular job that I love, like a regular actual daily job, which means that it's freed me up a little bit more schedule-wise to start doing the thing that I really should be doing, which is writing more stand-up. So I had this idea to start a show at Meltdown, at our space at Meltdown, twice a month. I guess on the first and third Mondays. Well, the first one's February 17th, and basically the show's called Beta Test, and it's just a way to force me to write new material. So I'm going to have two other comics on the show, and we'll all do 20 minutes and just experiment and just play with the crowd and work stuff out and workshop. And the way that you will want to see that is because the ticket prices will either be so super low or just free. I gotta figure it out. Because obviously it still costs money to put a show on at Meltdown, and I don't want to completely take advantage of my theater. So it'll either be super, super, super cheap or just free, so that you're not like, oh, wow, I just sit through 10 minutes of a comic trying to find something. But that's actually kind of fun to... I mean, I like watching that stuff. So Beta Test, the first one will be February 17th, Monday at 9 p.m. And it'll be myself and Matt Bronger and Jackie Cation. So that's obviously if you live in Los Angeles. If not, I'm sorry that we're not doing it in your town, but I'll have some other dates coming up elsewhere with the prepared material that I work through on Beta Test. So that's that business. I'd like to thank Carbonite Online Backup for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Have you backed up all your stuff today or yesterday or even last week or even a couple weeks ago? You'd still feel like, oh, maybe I wouldn't lose too much, but it'd still be a pain. It's like not getting a save point on it. Oh my God. I would play Skyrim or Bioshock and then not save. I'd be like, oh, I'll get through this level and then have to start over. Okay, that, imagine that, but with all of the files that make up who you are as a person in your life. Carbonite Online Backup is automatic, backs up your files instantly wherever you go. The free Carbonite app. Start your free trial today at carbonite.com. No credit card required. It's really a free trial. Then use the offer code Nerdist when you decide to buy to get two free bonus months. That's carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. This episode is Aaron Eckhart, who is, goddammit, just so charming. It's ridiculous. I mean, Aaron Eckhart burst onto the scene in 1997 in The Company of Men. There was a lot of buzz. He did a bunch of cool movies. Thank You for Smoking, an amazing movie, which I think I may have forgotten to bring up in this podcast because it is the podcast, the way the podcast works, and we just started talking about a lot of other fun stuff. And also Harvey Dent, come on, Two-Face, one of the greatest superhero movies of all time, Dark Knight. So anyway, we had a chance to sit down, and I really dig Aaron a lot. He's a super, super, super cool guy, and I like talking to guys who are around my age or just a little bit older, and just seeing if they've figured shit out yet. I haven't. I figured some stuff out, but there is a lot to go. His movie I, Frankenstein is in theaters Friday, January 24th, and it's sort of a it's based on a graphic novel, the I, Frankenstein graphic novel. It's written and directed by Stuart Beattie, and it's sort of a dystopian era Frankenstein story, so it looks super cool. And we should all go see it together. All right, that's it. I'm coming to your town, and we're going to go see I, Frankenstein together this Friday. It'll be like a Santa Claus thing. I'm going to hit every movie theater at once in a Michael Keaton Multiplicity-style movie-watching experience. Here's the Nerds Podcast, number 468, with Aaron Eckhart. God damn it, is he charming!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Catfish people.
It wasn't, no, I don't know, it was neither. It was an older guy, and he was talking to a young woman, and I don't know if he was trying to hit on her or impress her, but the only segment of the conversation that I heard was, and so I studied shamanism, and that was all. And I really wanted to be here where I was going without being creepy.
That's master level. You don't understand. You just met a master.
Did I though?
Yeah.
Because
yeah, you did.
I feel like shamanism is flying too close to the sun.
No, because you wouldn't say it, would you?
No.
But he did.
Yeah, I guess
that,
so.
That's master level stuff. I'm trying to teach Greg this stuff, master level stuff. Yeah.
What's
we're always talking. We were at a bar the other night in Milan, in Italy, and there was this girl and stuff, and we were saying, okay, how are you gonna approach the bar? What would you do? And we were getting into master level, like, like, you know, how we were gonna approach the guy first, and this, what we say, and all that sort of stuff. There's a, you know it.
I don't.
Yeah, you do.
I wish I did.
Yeah, you do.
Here would be my approach. Here I go, guys. I'm from America. Like, it would be something so stupid.
No,
is that charming to you in any way, my nasally voice?
How you use him to get to her, how to blah, 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 is...
Oh, that's some Bobby Fischer chess match stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
stuff.
Yeah,
I don't...
Yeah,
yeah. I'm no good at that.
Yeah.
I think I would just...
Are we recording this?
Yeah, 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 we're recording.
Okay.
No, but this is good because people want to learn... People want to learn how to... Because I think... You know, I've essentially gone from long-term relationship to long-term relationship, so I think now if I were single, I would just walk up to a girl and be like, "Do you want to move in?" Like, I don't know where I would go. I don't know. I don't know how you go from like
that's master level stuff.
But I feel like this guy was probably he looked like late 50s, so I feel like you have to be at least five decades in before you can drop shamanism, because if you're younger than that, then no, it's not.
But that's a little
work.
Creepy, shamanism at 50.
That's right.
Know, that's cooler when you have long hair and be, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
50's a little. Of course, I'm almost 50.
No, you can't be. Because I don't think you and I are that far apart in age.
That's the way I feel about it, too.
It's not possible. No. It's not possible.
Yes, sir.
How does that happen?
I'll be 46 in March.
God damn it. Well, at least. We're not our parents' generation. When that generation, or my dad's father was, by the time my dad's father was 55, like, he was just in his pajamas at 4 every day, and that was it.
That's right. Yeah, I don't, crutches.
I was talking to, I think maybe it was Craig Ferguson about it, where I go, because he's around 50, and I go, yeah, 50's like the new 35 or 40. He goes, nah, that's bullshit. That's what you tell yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, we're fucking old. Like, no.
It's interesting because I feel like I'm 45 now. I feel like I'm in better shape. But the problem is that other people don't feel that way about you. You know, like the people you're talking to, you know, they look at you. And it's weird because I look at kids' skin, you know, like actors I'm working with, you know, they're young people. I look at them as completely smooth. I'll just be looking at their face going like this, trying to remember what that was like. And they're like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, looking at your face.
It's like, spotless.
Can I touch that? You know, it's like, you don't think about it because you're so used to your own face, you know, and it's older and there's got wrinkles and stuff like that. But what skin used to be like, you know what I mean?
Just so elastic and perfect. And but see, we're lucky because the longer we're in the race and the longer we can keep up, like taking care of ourselves and being in good shape or whatever. You instantly, like each year you do that, you knock down like another exponentially high number of dudes who just fucking threw in the towel.
Right.
Like how many 45-year-olds, you know, are, you know, like a lot of times you look around and you go, Jesus Christ.
I go, how old are you? You guys, 45. I go, no.
Oh, no, please.
I do that all the time. They go, how old are you? You can't look like 45. I go, do I look like you?
Did you ever have the towel or did you just throw it in at like 30? Because that's what some guys just totally, and I think I was the reverse.
Yeah, but then they get single and then transformation takes place. You know, like if they're married or whatever and then, you know, and then all of a sudden they're single, you know, and they get on 90X, P90X or something like that, you know. Everything changes.
All he needs a pull-up bar and a DVD player. That's all I need.
That's all you need. You just need a tree and a rock.
And you could eat everything in the roots and then use the tree and the rock
to
work out.
You could eat a pine tree.
You could eat a pine tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very edible.
But I feel like at that point, I just never wanted to get to 50 and then go, now the mad scramble, like my life depends on it, you know? Mm. I kind of wanted it to be I was a big...
How old are you?
42.
Oh, yeah.
42.
Well, you look good.
No, thanks.
You look good, too. 42.
You look good, too.
I would have said you were in your 30s.
Well, if you saw me in my 20s, I looked like 40 when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And then I cleaned up my act and...
Are you married?
I'm not. I do have a girlfriend, though.
Do you have children?
No.
What's wrong with you?
I don't.
That's the question you get when you after your 40s.
I think the doctor said I'm too self-involved. I think was the term to have kids. No, I don't know. I don't. You have kids?
No.
No. See, you don't have kids either.
But I had this conversation yesterday with a director I was talking to, and he goes, "When you get over 40, you know, married, no kids is weird. Whereas before 40, it's cool.
Yeah.
So you go right into weird.
Oh, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Because there's the supposition that there's some reason.
Yeah.
Are you damaged or is there something strange as opposed to just like, I don't know, just have.
And there's lots of reasons. When somebody goes, is there a reason? You're, there's a lot of reasons I'm not married. I just had this conversation with my driver on the way here. He said, I love my kids, man, but
sometimes.
I can't even tell you what he said. He said something that I thought was funny, but I don't think other people would think would funny.
It certainly wouldn't be anything worse than what Louis C.K. has said, so
what did he say?
Oh, no, just like his whole, you know, he has specials devoted to fatherhood and, you know, but all the dark side, all the stuff that, you know, like, it's all of my kids are assholes kind of stuff, you know?
No, he said, I love my kids. I can't say it. There's too many beautiful women here that would take offense at it. Anyway,
I don't think anyone would be remotely offended. If it's too bad, we'll cut it out.
It's violent.
Good. Let's say what?
No, because I have to go out and be with my driver all day.
This podcast This podcast will not go up until after you finish.
I don't want to start thinking weird things about my driver.
Okay.
Because he's taking me to weird places and stuff like that, and he knows where I live.
So the gist of it is that it was not a rousing endorsement for fatherhood.
No, he was somehow incendiate, or he wanted to burn his.
Oh, gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha.
How's that?
Figuratively speaking.
Yeah.
Well, I think particularly with what we the kind of nomadic lifestyle that performers lead. It's probably, I'm always surprised when an actor goes, I'm going to have kids. I'm like, really? Because you're probably not going to be around a whole lot.
How are you going to have kids?
How am I?
Well, no, but I mean,
how?
The same question.
How? Yeah.
How, you know, I mean, it's tough. I mean, I've never really figured that one out, you know? And then how are you going to see them and deal with them? And I always felt like I would have kids and then I always sort of fantasize or romanticize the idea of bringing my kids on set, you know, and having a you know, a movie life. You know, my kids would then look back when they're, you know, drug induced and talk about their times when they were with their dad. You know, I mean, I don't see any good things happening, you know, in that lifestyle. But, you know, at least they would have, you know, contacts where they could get drugs in, like, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Morocco and Bulgaria and Australia.
That would be the reason to bring them.
Yeah, they would have hookups in all these countries.
That's very generous of you.
So if they had to flee this country,
yeah, exactly.
You know, they could go right to the source.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it, you know, I wouldn't say my dad was a good dad, but he taught us how to get out of Cuba. And that was really...
No, into Cuba.
Into Cuba and then back out. It was really a good... It was really a... From that point, he was great.
I'm looking forward to having kids.
I think it'll be... The one thing about it is that I think actors have to... I've sort of joked about it before, but I think performers have to be naturally... self-centered, because you're constantly in your own head, and so I feel like that inherently makes it difficult to then focus on another life, which is what you should do when you have a kid. Yeah. Is make it
this
all
is
about
how
them.
It goes down. This is how it goes down. You're at home, your kids, you know, comes out in the living room, and you're, you know, doing your thing and you're rehearsing or whatever like that, and the kid's like, "Dad, I'm hungry." Shut up, man. You know, I'm like my dog, for example. Are we getting in territory that I should not be in?
We're fine.
Okay. My dog, like, I had a yellow lab, right? Very sensitive dog. Very beautiful dog, you know. He could not be in the house when I rehearsed. Because, you know, movies are all about death, betrayal, you know, bitterness, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know. So I'd be there rehearsing, you know, going, "Shut up, you fucking hate you." You know? By myself in my house, you know what I'm saying? Or like crying. My dogs, if I can see my life through my dog's eyes, I'm in a corner in my house, beautiful day. I'm sitting in there rehearsing, crying in the corner, you know, my dog's sitting there going, "Can we swear?"
Yeah, whatever you want.
It's like, what the fuck are you doing? That's, you know, and then, so he would leave the house whenever I pulled out the script.
Your pets are emotional sponges.
Totally.
And so they will, you know, a dog always knows when you're upset, and they come up and they want to make you feel bad. And from his point of view, it must have been like a really fucked up relationship where he's like, "This guy's just never happy. I don't know what am I doing?
And it's like a bipolar relationship, because you're sitting there like 1 minute going, "Hey, bud, you want some? Go get the ball. Shut up. You know, you're fucking, you know what I'm saying?
You said to get the ball, man. What am I doing wrong?"
Yeah, or... Yeah, so that was tough. And I see the same relationship with kids, you know, because actors are tough, man. And especially if you married an actor, mm-hmm. you know, and that would be, you know, "Mommy's, you know, you know, Mommy, why is, you know, Daddy, why is Mom, you know, drugged out and, you know, prostitute?"
She's searching for a role,
exactly.
Sweetie.
Yeah, how do you explain that to your kids?
Well, I think the problem with I see the upside and the downside to dating or marrying within the business, because on the one hand, you have a partner that understands you don't have a regular job, you don't have a regular life, it's weird, it's nomadic, it's emotionally taxing. But on the other hand, they essentially probably have all of the same flaws that you have, and then when those kind of rub against each other, it's a no is bueno.
You know, when you're out at a party and you see a director, literally your wife is pushing you into the bushes to get to the director.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
She's like this.
"I'll just be here, honey. Don't fuck him too hard." Yeah. "I've been there."
Exactly.
"I've been there."
And you're like, somehow you understand it. It's just weird. You know what I'm saying? You're like, "Okay, honey. Don't worry about it." That's, you know, I've never been able to date actresses, actually. I've never done it.
How do you meet people?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I quit drinking and all that. I don't know how many years ago, 9, 10 years ago.
Oh, me too. Same
exact time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. I think largely because I was sensing that it was not a good long-term plan. And I knew if I didn't stop, I probably wouldn't. And I think it was a vanity issue where I was like, I don't look good and I really want to try to get my career back because I had stalled. Yeah. And so I thought, I just need to focus. And so then I did. But then when I did, once I had clarity and some distance, I realized, like, oh, I was doing it for all of these reasons that I didn't realize at the time. So,
yeah.
What about you?
Well, same exact. In fact, I couldn't have said it better. I mean, it's, you know, you just, you know, you wake up and you see everything's, you know, spiraling around the toilet. You know what I mean? And, you know, not every, I wasn't probably the nicest guy when I drank and all that. And so I decided to give that up. And so I'm much more, I get up, like I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning.
Oh my God. Say.
Yeah. You know, I was riding my bike at 6 this morning, you know. That kind of stuff is good.
Yeah.
You know, but the social aspects of it are much more difficult, you know, because, A, you don't go to the places that, you know, where people are.
Right.
And then you don't want to marry an alcoholic or...
No, it's not a good idea.
You know, yeah. Somebody who's a big drinker or
yeah.
druggy or something like that. So, again, the pool's getting smaller and smaller. So it's been, then if you stay in this town, it's more difficult.
And also the younger you are, the more patience you have for drunk people and people in bars. And the yeah. older you get, especially if you don't drink, you're just like, I don't have the energy for this shit. And there, because there essentially a lot of them are just fake conversations.
I had a guy, I was at the Golden Globes 2 days ago or whatever it was. I had a guy who had been drinking in my face, literally 2 inches from my face, you know, lecturing me about life. You know, I told Stace, I told you this. And literally he's right here for about 15 minutes.
Just little spit, like the alcohol yeah, spits everything. In your eyes.
I could not get away from him. You know what I'm saying? And I thought, that's the reason why I don't go out. That's the reason why I don't drink. Because I don't know what to do here.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to be that guy who's, You know, proximity. I have proximity issues. You
yeah.
know, you and I right now are, a nice distance from each
We're
other.
We're a desk length apart.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, there's plenty of room to maneuver here. I mean, but you get any closer, and that starts getting weird.
Well, especially, you know, it's less excusable if someone's sober and they're right here. At yeah. least if someone's drunk, you're like, all right, they don't depth perception. I don't know. Yeah, but a sober right. person, you're like, you don't have any excuse. You're just now we're nose to nose.
Yeah.
You were just in Milan a couple of days ago?
I was in Paris, London, Milan for this movie, and which was very cool. Paris was excellent because I get up each morning, like I said, and then I study French for 2 hours. You know, I read all the papers, all the French papers, and so I was good to go back there. I used to live in France for a little while, so I go back there. And it was funny because I went into Paris and we were talking to journalists and that, and I'm trying out my French and all that. And I knew everything about the country. I knew they were having floods. I knew the political situation. I knew, you know, it was kind of fun to do that. So, and then we went to London, Milan. Now we're going here.
All the French, the stuff that's going on with the president right now is really amazing. Mm. Which is just seeing the stories. They go, oh, it turns out French women are not cool with you having affairs, yeah. as everyone well, had suggested before.
He rides his Vespa. Over to this apartment, you know, and basically this woman is there. She's an actress.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point. You know what I'm saying? It's the definitive cherry on the cake right there. I mean, she's an actress who's basically banging him.
Yeah. And by the way out of his league, his wife and the woman that he was having, yeah. like his yeah. the guy... Did you see the pictures of him? And now he just looks completely,
yeah.
completely
He looks like a bowling ball.
But he does look like a bowling ball. It looks like all of his facial features are sort of, there's this continental drift that's happening mm. to some weird like face Pangea that's yeah. going to collect in the middle of his skull.
Yeah.
And now it's even, everything's even more.
The back of his head is you know, coming to the front of his head is will soon envelop his features. You know what I'm saying? They need to, you know, it's like the mud falling down.
They should just give him a break and like, look at him. Just let him have this. Could you just let him have this, please? Because there aren't a lot of good years left.
He's having an affair. But the French are cool with that, ultimately.
Except now they're, I think the idea of this sort of idea of, well, it's all right as long as no one finds out, you
yeah.
know. But now that everyone knows, I don't know. I guess if you get to be at that, actually, this is accidental segue. You've played characters that are seemingly like, I'm bulletproof. What's going to happen? Mm. And so it must be kind of a head trip when you are, you know, the head of a superpower. And you sort of feel like, man, I can do whatever the fuck I want.
Well, really, when I think about that, and my driver, I just had that conversation with my driver, too, is, you know, it's more the hedge funders, you know, these guys who just get huge contracts, huge windfall, you know, money, and they're out there with their buddies. There's just no rules. I felt it mostly with those guys. I mean, there's no rules. They make the rules. And oddly enough, women are very attracted to that, you know, and they know it. Because the women in that sense become more like the men, you know what I mean? And tell me if I'm offending any women in this room.
No.
This has been my experience in New York researching these kind of people. And it's actually sickening, you know. And to think that they are in power and that they're running both economically and politically is, you know, it's scary. And, you know, it's everywhere. But, you know, it's very empowering. They have the money and they have all the accoutrements, you know, the big cigars and the fancy suits, and they go to martini bars. That's when you find the real superheroes.
So in your estimation, with some wisdom and experience and some sort of some social anthropology under your belt, these guys think that this is power, or this is what it means to be a man. And what are you finding out? What do you think it means to be a man, or to, you know, be powerful? What do you think that is in reality?
I have carpets in my house, man. I don't know. I'm in the 70s. I still have carpets. Let's see. I don't know. I'm going to try to answer your question.
Okay.
You know, I could say, like, you know, bullshit answer, but I really will think.
I can prod you with what I've been thinking it is lately, which is, I think it's all about accepting responsibility.
Okay.
Rather, responsibility for your actions, or responsibility for other people, like accepting, owning up to things you do, and being accepting responsibility.
Okay. Okay. That's a good one. And I'll say, the day that you stop caring what other people think of you is the day that your life start living.
Okay.
You know, this idea that we're basically all aspects of our lives, we're performing for others at our own expense. You know, it's the whole please disease. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to make, in my life, I'm always trying to make other people happy at my expense, you know? And I just wish one day that I could stop doing that and just do what I want to do. You know, and there are many examples of that in this life, in this town, actors doing it today, taking responsibility for their own careers, you know, doing their own material, you know, being producers, putting money into it. And at the Golden Globes, we just had many examples of that. You know, Matthew McConaughey said he just put money into Dallas Buyers Club, you know, and I think that's, in terms of this business as an actor, it's about taking responsibility. It's not giving a shit about whatever anybody thinks, and doing why you're put on this earth, you know, because I feel like every single person here has a monster inside of them, and that monster wants to get out and scream. And yet, everything we do in life is trying to push that monster back down so that we will be civil, we'll be presentable, we'll be, you know, acceptable, you know. But when you're alone with your dog, you know what I'm saying? You know, the monster wants to come out.
Totally.
And we mask the monster. And I felt like alcohol and all that sort of stuff was masking the monster. So I feel like that would, for me, that really be, I think being a man or a woman is, what that really means is, and being an adult is owning up to your own shit, and it's doing what you want to do in this life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, money, I think, is far overrated. I have a very good relationship with money. I like money. I like buying nice things for myself and for people. But when you get to the stage where I have to make money in order to sustain a lifestyle or whatever it is, I think it becomes dangerous. And you would rather work for the money than actually working for yourself. And when you get to be, when you're dead, did you say, I lived my life my own way, or right before you're dead? You can't say it when you're dead. Nobody will hear you,
dude. You have to slip it in right before the door shuts.
Nobody will hear you, except God. And he's already yelling at you.
What are you doing?
You idiot.
Throw me the whip, I throw you the idol. I agree with that, too, because I definitely feel that... I do enjoy having money for things because it's a comfort, and it's a whole different, it's a stress that I don't have to have anymore. But I also I have a house that I bought over a year ago, and it's a nice house, and it's been remodeling it for a year. I've never lived there, so I've been staying with my girlfriend, and she just has a one bedroom apartment. And honestly, I feel like, oh well, if I didn't have the house, I'd be fine here because she's here and I'm happy.
What if you? This is the challenge I'm going for 2014. I would love to sell every or give away everything that I have, so I absolutely have nothing, and then try to rebuild myself. Do you see what I'm saying?
I mean, do.
How liberating that would be. And I'm not saying going into a different métier or a job. I'm saying as an actor and rebuilding myself and seeing if I could do it, you know, and because it makes you young, it makes you vital, it makes you hungry again, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I look around, I often look around because I bought my furniture willy-nilly, you know, it's not all coordinated like yours and your new house.
By the way, I have no furniture in the house yet.
But I look at my bedside table and I go, what's so hot about that bedside table? I go, is that the bedside table I'm going to die with? I've had it for 15 years. I don't even like it. You know what I'm saying? It holds a shitty lamp that I don't like that I got off a movie. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I go, and so I really have this battle with this bedside table. And I go, why are you by my bed? Why do I have to look at you right before I go to bed every single night? And then I start looking around my house. And I go, I don't need you. I don't need you.
And the dog's like, but we're cool, right?
Yeah.
We're cool? You're going to give away all the shit,
but dog's
cool.
Dead.
Oh, no.
Yeah, dog's dead. Oh. Yeah, he had a good life.
I'm sure he did.
Oh, yeah. He was well loved.
Oh, that's good. Did you take him places? Did you get to travel with him?
Never.
At all? Never traveled places?
Oh, he just stayed in my room.
Full of shit that you want to get rid of.
Yeah, of course. Actually, a funny story about my dog, real quick. People like movie stories, don't they?
Movie stories are great. Dog stories are even
better. I remember, I'll tell you a movie story that's quite good. My dog was in Northern California, I believe, and I'm in Southern California, and Julia Roberts were doing Erin Brockovich. She was dating Benjamin Bratt at the time, and he lived in Northern California, and I said, and Julia asked me, or Steven did, if I could be on set at this particular time, you know, and I said, you guys, I can't. My dog's in Northern California, and I have to bring him with me. And so Julia said, she said, well, I'm going to be up there visiting Benjamin. She goes, I'm going to fly up there. I got my private jet, right? I'll pick up your dog. I'll bring him back to, we were in Barstow at the time. I'll keep him for 3 days. You know, I'll look after your dog and keep him with my dog. And I said, that's fantastic. You know, that's great. So my parents took my dog to the place and Julia was there, got on the private jet and everything. She took the dog, right? So I get to Barstow 3 days later, man. And Julia comes, I go knock on Julia's trailer, you know, and she comes out and she's like, take your dog. She's like, here. I go, what? I got a really good dog. He's well-mannered and everything. But, you know, he's in a foreign place. So anyway.
Also probably a huge Julia Roberts fan, so it's probably very difficult to contain.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, he likes most, you know, he's a big film fan. Yeah, I was going to say something.
Something really inappropriate. Yeah. It's fine, you can.
No. I gotta have a career.
No, that's fine, I understand.
This thing actually isn't going to go out on air, is it?
No. This is just
about my furniture that I have carpet?
This was just for us. This was just for you and me.
Right.
I love the idea that the story you just told sounds like a weird dream I would have, like, I had this dream I was doing a movie and Julia Roberts picked up my dog that was in Northern California for some reason and brought it to Barstow. That just sounds like a weird, that doesn't sound like a real thing that happened to somebody.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
That's insane.
It's a fantastic story.
It's a great, great story.
She didn't need to do that.
No.
She was very, very, very generous to me on that movie.
Oh, that's good. So it was a good experience.
What do you care?
I do care.
I mean, seriously.
I really do.
You didn't say it more like you do care.
Okay. I'm not a good actor, though. I'm really happy that you... Now, see, I don't even know. I'm glad you had... Oh, no, that's not it. Line. Katie, what was my line?
You're really glad. Aaron, I'm really glad that you...
No, I'm trying
don't
to
take
do
that. Don't take that pause there.
You know what it is? It's that I'm trying to do I'm doing the James Lipton thing. I'm really glad, but it just never sounds sincere. I think I sound naturally sarcastic when I say things.
Yeah.
Because that's my only defense mechanism, being a comedian. I can't fight anyone. I can just, like, snark at him, and that's about as far as I can go.
Comedians can't fight?
Most of them, no.
I'm very good friends with David Spade.
Yeah,
I think he falls into that category.
David Spade would break like a graham cracker crust. Like you could just poke through him. He's a delightful man and very funny.
Yeah, but you know what you guys have? You guys have tongues and minds.
Well,
you know, and you could do more damage with those. I mean, literally, you could disarm the biggest bozo in the world by making him feel bad about his mother or his dad. You know what I'm saying?
Shortly before he dismantles us physically,
he wouldn't even get that far. It's almost like a super. It's like a superhero, like comedians, wit and sarcasm, and you know, kind of, they wouldn't even understand it. You would paralyze them. You should actually take this. This is my idea.
Okay.
This is my idea.
Okay.
You could paralyze. Well, it's this. You could paralyze him. I mean, that would be your superhero, the super, your powers that, you know, when somebody's coming at you and they want to kill you or something like that, they're really angry and you just say that one thing that makes them stop and think, and they're not sure if it's a joke or if it's not a joke, or, you know, then they reflect about on their childhood. And this is all like taking place in a second, you know, and then you pounce.
See, pounce what? Pounce on them?
Well, you can run.
Pounce away.
Yeah, but that's not a good movie.
No. Okay, no, you're right. That's not a good movie. That's just it. Because I do have that thing where I go, all right, if a guy came up and tried to rob me, would I be able to play it cool and be like, hey, cool, you know, here's this bag. Hey, you need it more than I do. You take it. It's fine. You got the gun, everything. Like, would I try to be funny? Or would, in actuality, would just be like, please don't kill me. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I would be able to keep it.
Okay, well, what's the other side of the coin? That you go up and beat the shit out of them. I mean, let's play that card.
That's not on any coin in my pocket.
No. I mean, but you must fantasize about that.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. I mean, being a kid who got picked on and bullied when I was younger, of course. Like, I, you know, anytime someone comes in as an, you know, like as a, as, if someone gets alpha male on me, I just, like, the hair on my neck starts to stand up and things come out of my mouth that I can't stop.
Right.
But I don't think I could really back it up with these guns.
Well, I do think that intellectualism or sarcasm, wit, whatever, intelligence basically is stronger than brawn. Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. I see. I mean, you know, guys, you know, people can talk themselves. I'm sure David, comedians, whoever it is, talk themselves out of fights all the time, you know, and then end up and getting the guy to be your friend, you know, because you have that way of, you know, constructing an argument or making the guy laugh or whatever it is. It's very powerful.
Because we don't have anything else to bargain with, so we have to do it that way.
Or they might just kick your ass.
It's possible that they'd be like, hey, you're funny. Smash, smash, smash.
Say it again, asshole.
They'll just keep me around. You make me laugh. I'm going to punch you. I think...
What's this interview about?
It's not about anything. It's a... I always describe a podcast as like... It's like the first phone conversation or like a coffee chat you have with someone that you've just met, but you really are interested to know more about him. So it's really just just a conversation.
I like it.
Unless of an interview. Because you've been doing press for like 10 or 12 days already. And I
years.
Heard it's going to go on. And years. It's going to go on forever. So it's...
Yeah.
You know...
And I haven't talked about any of these subjects.
No, it'll come up. We'll get to
it. No, what I'm saying is it's refreshing that I haven't talked about my driver's, you know, his tendencies.
Well, you don't get a chance to. You do junkets, and so you basically, you're so much of your press schedule is soundbite culture. So they're like, what was it like to work on this movie? Did you read Mary Shelley when you were growing up? What was this thing like?
And I dated Mary Shelley.
Did you really?
Yeah.
How was she in the old Sackaroo?
She was creative. Naturally.
The pen is very mighty. But you're going to, you know, I'm sure you, it must be interesting to, especially when you start doing press, you guys do the same, actors do the same thing as comedians, I would imagine. You start doing your press at the beginning And then you just start talking and answering the same questions. And then you start sort of workshopping stuff. And then halfway through, you start getting down, okay, these are going to be the answers.
Yeah.
Because you just don't have the energy otherwise to come up with brand new answers for every one of the same questions.
That's true. I will say this, though. I do try to answer everybody honestly. I try to look them in the eyes. I try to make sure that their time is valuable mm-hmm. and that I deem it as valuable, that they're valuable. I think that's the thing, because they know it, and they don't give a shit anyway, man. I'm serious. Like, they're robots, too, in their own way. They're going... And plus, half of them don't like any movie that you're in anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Do they tell you that?
Look, I mean, like, today there was in the French paper I was reading was this, you know, I'm very into body language, you know. I mean, what you're telling me right now with your body language, or, you know. So I read this whole thing on it today even. And, you know, you can tell how a journalist feels about you, for sure. You know, about the movie, about, you know. What scares me the most is when Aaron, we met, you know, like that. That scares me more. Because, you know, something bad's going to happen after that. You know what I'm saying?
You said the worst thing to my girlfriend at a party. No.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We met. I'm like,
I never expect. Like, if I met you again in a week and I said, hi, I'm Chris. And you were like, doesn't ring a bell. There's not one part of me would be like, you son of a bitch. I'd be like, well, no, of course, because you... This is a whirlwind. This is a flurry of humans.
Now you meet, you know, hopefully we'll do this again, you know, and then you develop relationships with all the journalists. You know, I do know them. I greet them by name sometimes. I develop relationships, especially with the HFPA, right? Is that the HFPA? HFPA. Say that.
HFPA.
Thank you. You get to know him. One time I was in the Golden Globes. I don't know if you want to talk. You talk about what you want to talk about.
No, you talk about what you want to talk about.
I'm in the big chair. I'm in the comfortable chair.
You're in the boss's chair right now.
Let me tell you how this conversation started, which was I was offered a chair, which was it's a fold-up plastic chair you get at catering. Or I don't even know why I was offered that chair. But there was a big now an office recliner, which I took, which is quite comfortable.
See, it's nice. This is about you. This isn't about me.
So I got to talk about what I got to talk about.
Yeah.
I completely forgot.
You were talking about the Golden Globes. You said something about the Golden Globes.
Oh, yeah. I said, you know, I was in the Golden Globes one time. You know, have you ever...
I've not been to the Golden Globes. I've been to the Emmys, but not the Golden Globes.
Right. Well, in the Golden Globes, there's big tables and you sit around and you eat and then there's the stage and stuff. And I was looking around the room one day and, I mean, there was just everybody there, you know, the biggest of the big. And I thought, you know, I played my cards right. I'm with these guys for the next 20 years. So I got to... you know, make friends. You know what I'm saying? Because these are my peers. This is, in a way, it's my family. You know what I'm saying? And so hopefully you're going to go to the Golden Globes more than once. And it was had a profound effect on me.
How do you make friends? Like, would you just walk up to someone and go, hey, Martin Scorsese, I'm Aaron. How's it going?
I think that time I walked up to Clint Eastwood, who I had never met, and he was surrounded by... you know, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. And I said, hey, Clint Eastwood. I didn't say that.
Hey, are you Clint Eastwood?
Yeah, I go, you look a lot, but you're a little smaller, but you should use that.
You look like an older Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. I thought even for the hair. I won't tell the story afterwards.
No, tell it. It's fine.
It's a bad story.
Oh,
should I tell a story of what happened to me in the airport the other day?
Of course he should.
Yeah. No. Okay.
Damn it. Say it using fake names.
No, but I'll tell the Clint Eastwood story. So I walked up to him and I said, you know, he's surrounded by all the, you know, the biggies. And so I went up and I said, and Spielberg was there. I said, hey, Mr. Eastwood, I said, you know, my name's Aaron. I said, I'd really love to work with you sometime. I'm not a total nobody, you know. But he looked at me like... you know, like he was looking through air and he goes, yeah, we'll see what's shaking sometime. And I was like, it hurt. You know, it was
three words, Eastwood. Harvey fucking Dent.
He goes, yeah, he says, we'll see what's shaking. I go, I'll never work with you, Will. There's zero chance I will ever work with Clint Eastwood. So the moral of the story is, if you're ever at the Golden Globes, do not approach anybody.
Not just Clint Eastwood, not anyone.
Nobody.
I would say that is Clint Eastwood's loss. Because it's, you know, like, a guy like that should want to know who the younger actors are.
Well, I mean, I put him in a difficult situation because, you know, we were all just getting up. It was a big hubbub, you know, and he was surrounded and stuff. I probably should have picked a better moment, but I was starstruck by him. You know, I grew up with Clint Eastwood on, and so when I saw him, I thought, oh my God, I got to go meet this guy, you know? And that happens in that room, you know? You see people like last night or whenever we did it was like, you know, just some amazing people and everybody's, you know, doing great work.
Were you ever surprised by someone who was like, hey, I'm a fan of your work?
Yeah, all the time. John Voight did it to me. The other day, I'm always surprised who comes up and knows who I am and then can say something that you're actually in. You know what I'm saying? That's right. You know,
which is amazing because you In the Company of Men was 97,
yeah,
right? So it's like you've been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, people forget, you know, people are more concerned about their own careers, I guess. And
that's
what have
true.
You done? What have you done for me lately? I totally understand that, you know. I'm less, you know, a woman the other day said, big fan, she said, Aaron, you know, come sign autographs. I went over there and signed autographs. She goes, loved you in White House Down.
Oh, thanks.
that was very gracious.
And the other problem is that, like, even though I look at you and I go, say Aaron Eckhart has a
we're
has
sort
a
perfect, of twins.
But you have a good jaw. You have a good jawline. You have a much better jawline.
Somebody on Twitter today said that when you have a jawline like mine, you need a Q-tip to wipe out the crap in it. So I mean, don't feel so bad. You don't have a chin like mine.
Oh, Twitter. But also I think just as. Because we're just white guys. Like, we're just we're sort of non-ethnic white guys. So we blend in to a lot of other white guys. You know, like,
yeah,
if we were sitting next to, like, Aaron Paul and, you know, 20 other people, it'd be like, oh, they're all of the same crayon box.
Yeah, we do look very much alike. This is what you're going to look like in 3 years.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah, you're going to have, like, this, you know.
No, I don't mind that, though. Yeah. I don't mind that. I don't mind getting the, like, I feel like, you know, Bryan Cranston called it the crag, and it's got a good personality. Like,
I was doing a photo shoot one time, right? And you were there, Stace. I was doing a photo shoot one time, you know, and I'm, you know, photo shoots are just uncomfortable anyway, because you got to, like, be a model and give them look one, two, and three. And one of the photographer's assistants came up to me and goes, hey, you might want to watch those lines up there.
Oh, no.
I was like you. I was like, dude, I like those lines.
This is living.
Yeah.
This is life. Living.
I said, why are you talking to me anyway? I only talked to the photographer.
Sorry. Oh, you're activating his lines. Calm down. Don't ask him questions. I always know, like, because I have to, for work, I have to get, you know, the makeup put on every day. And so you always sort of subconsciously know, like, oh, that's where the problem areas are, because they just spend a little more time under the eyes. Or like, oh, let's just even you out. Oh, I guess I'm not even anymore. Like, it's funny to me, and I keep going back to this idea that that to be a performer, you are sort of hypersensitive to the world, but then you go into a business that essentially also attacks your sensitivities and insecurities. It seems like the worst marriage of things that you could possibly have.
Yeah, but you know, it's fun when you embrace it.
Yeah,
you know, you really embrace it and go, that's the way it is.
You have to, or you go crazy.
Yeah, and it's fun too. I like being my age in this business. I see a lot of upside for that, you know. I like being an adult. I like having, you know, I mean, I like having all these lines on my face and because it's lived. I mean, look at Clint Eastwood, for example, you know. I mean, you can't have everybody smooth skin and beautiful and looking great all the time. It's just not good for drama.
Yeah.
And that's what this is all about. I mean, people would rather see, in my opinion, even in superheroes, you know, lines on the face and like Bryan Cranston. You know what I'm saying? I saw him. He won an award. I gave him an award the other night. And I like seeing that. Otherwise, people don't take you seriously.
Right.
You know, you look at Jack Nicholson, you look at Sean Penn, you look at great actors, you know, that's life lived. You know, that's experiences under there. And not, no sort of, in fact, in Hollywood, beauty almost goes against you if you're, you know, early on, if you're a guy, you know, because nobody wants to take you seriously. So you have to somehow fuck yourself up. Like right off the bat in my career, after In the Company of Men, I did Your Friends and Neighbors. I gained 45 pounds. I had a mustache and red hair. And people loved it.
Was it must have been fun for you to realize like, oh, I can manipulate myself in such a way that I can actually do any kind of, I mean, it's good. The guys that can do leading stuff and character stuff are the guys who will work forever.
That's right. And that's what you're going for. It's longevity. And it's also interesting work, and directors appreciate that, you know? So a director, if you can show a director a different look, a different way, then he's going to appreciate that. A, because he's going to say, you're willing to do it. You're willing to make yourself ugly, or willing to go all the way for the character. I had this discussion yesterday with a director. He says, are you willing to gain 40 pounds or whatever like that? And I said, yeah, for sure. If the character's right, and if you're not going to screw the movie up.
Are you willing to not fuck the movie up if I do
that? Is that a fair question?
That's a fair question. Yeah, that's a totally fair question.
Because gaining 40 pounds is tough.
Well, I think most people sort of look at the idea of, you know, like look at a leading man guy and they go, oh, it'd be so great to be that guy. But then you also know, like, well, you're not going to be that guy forever. So you have to figure out how to roll with it and own it, like you're saying, and figure out how to adapt and change. I mean, if you want longevity, maybe you just want to, like, oh, I just want to be that guy and then I'll quit and then fuck it.
The wrench in the spokes, or whatever that saying is this. Everybody's cool with what you just said. The problem is you're continually asking me, yeah, but you will not be a... How should I say this? Will you say this for me?
Sure.
It's being attractive to the opposite sex.
Right.
You see, that's the big thing. Like, once they say... You know, once you stop becoming a, then Hollywood doesn't, they're not going to pair you up in that thing, and you're not going to become, you know, I don't want to say a sex symbol because that's not what it is, but you have to have an attractability. That's becomes the problem, is that you're not willing to give that up.
Right.
If people just didn't give a shit about that, then they would have much more interesting careers.
Yeah.
But that's why you see, like, guys in their 60s going out with a 25-year-old in a movie. You know what I mean? Because
right.
They still consider themselves to be sex symbols.
To be that guy, yeah.
Yeah, when the audience really just wants that guy to be a craggly old man in a fisherman movie. You know, pulling some fish out of the sea and then going home and drinking some whiskey.
Right.
You know what I mean? But they're unwilling to do that because they can't see themselves as a non-sex symbol.
It is funny, and I'm just starting to feel the first. I mean, when I was like 30 or 35, I was like, oh, these guys who just won't go quietly into the just fucking, you know. And all young people say that to me. They go, oh, just fucking act. And then you start getting a little older, and you're like, it's not yet. You know,
like,
it's not so bad. Oh, it's a little bit skin. It's skin. It's a little bit extra skin. It is. So I definitely feel. I feel, and what I believe it is just that biological urge for, like, survival. You know, yeah. Like, you don't want to let it go. Is it, the thing you said earlier about, you know, being a grown up essentially means, you know, not giving a shit what anyone thinks. But I kind of fear that moment when I, like, you know, go out of the house, like, in a fishing hat and Bermuda shorts and Birkenstocks. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Who am I trying to? The first time I say, who am I trying to impress? I'm going to be like, oh, goddamn.
Is that your dream?
No, not at all.
What if you wanted to go out in leather pants and, you know, like, you know, spiked heels?
Yeah.
I mean, or, okay, wherever your dream is.
That would mix it up. That would totally mix it up.
No, what I'm saying is, like, if you're not going to do that because you're not going to go out in Bermuda shorts and a Bermuda shirt. If you just follow your dream and go, like, even with, like, wearing a suit, you know, to an interview, like, fuck, I don't want to wear a suit to an interview.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why are you making me wear a suit to an interview? It's
not who I am. You can show up in Bermuda shorts.
It's not who I am.
That's right.
You know, as soon as you get rid of that and go, I'm doing it my own way. Look at guys like Kevin Smith. You know, look at Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
You know, he does what he wants.
Oh, yeah. Kev is definitely pioneered not only film and podcasting and new media and stuff, and he really, I think, encapsulates this idea now of like, oh, it's okay to not play the game, and it's okay to, I mean, it can be a little more work if you decide to dance outside the system, but I think that's a lot of times where the more rewarding stuff is.
100%.
Because then you're not at the mercy of someone telling you you're good enough or you're not good enough or you're not a this enough or you're that too much, and you know, you're just sort of saying like, meh, I'm just
whatever
me.
You don't have to ask the question, what do you think?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whatever it's about. Of course you're going to collaborate with people. You have to make films in this business or whatever it is. But when you're asking, what do you think? That's a question I ask all the time. You know, I ask Stacey what she thinks all the time. It's important to me that I be presentable. But inside you're going, oh, you know, it's just, you want to be yourself, you know? And I think when I come to be myself and do what I really want, that's when I'm going to be really happy.
Do you feel like you're doing that a lot now?
It's tough, you know. I mean, scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably hitting about, I'm a 330 hitter or something like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, because I'm trying, you know, when you make a film, you have to please the producers, you have to please, you know, everything else. You're trying to get future work and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, it's like the golf swing, you know, the easier you strike the ball, the better the hit, right? So it's counterintuitive.
Right.
Right. And I think this is counterintuitive too. Like us sitting here and talking at will like this and just free association like this is a much more interesting conversation than if you had, you know, bullet point questions and all this sort of stuff. This is a much more fun interview. You know, this is more like what people want to hear. This is outside the box. Isn't podcasting outside the box? Or is that in the box now?
I think it's outside the box still. I think it's outside the box still. I don't think it's tipped yet.
It's the wild, wild west.
It is. It totally is.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the medium just didn't exist before about 8 years ago. There aren't really rules, but I think the one thing that we're all discovering is that, you know, it's much more interesting to hear what people are like and how they, I mean, it's almost like a social experiment. Like, oh, that guy's really interesting. How does he process the world? Mm-hmm. How did he get to where he was? What does he think? What is he like? That stuff's more, it's more interesting to me anyway, to hear people talk about what they're passionate about rather than just, well, we shot for 24 weeks, and there was a lot of makeup, and acting in a green screen's weird, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a holdover from just soundbite culture that, you know, for years and years, we just didn't have a long-form medium like this. Mm-hmm.
I would much rather listen to how you are. In fact, I asked Jay Leno this last night. Jay, what do you do when you go home? You know, and he told me what he does. I won't say it on the air. It's not cool, but, you know, I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I take off all my clothes, and then I have I have this voodoo doll that's in the shape of, there's a Conan one and a Jimmy Fallon one. And then I stab it repeatedly with my penis. I'll see you guys later. I gotta go buy a car.
Was it similar to that? I mean, you don't have to say if I was totally on the nose. Sometimes I can't stop myself.
I left. For the record, I left 3 minutes ago.
Aaron's gone. Where did he go? Yeah, Katie, could you let him leave?
I'm not here.
How
right
could you
now
let him leave?
Get me back in here.
Come back, Aaron, get back in here, please. I'm sorry. You're very loud feet.
Hey, I didn't appreciate that.
Okay, you're right. I was way out of line.
I'm
going to
sit down for a couple more minutes.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I don't want this to happen again.
Okay, I really...
The movie's I, Frankenstein. It's in 3D IMAX. I spent 6 months training for it. It comes out on the 24th of January.
Yeah, another thing that I think is really cool about your movie is that it's based on the comic series, and the guy who wrote it is a guy who was one of those, like, think outside the box guys. He's the same guy who wrote Underworld, right? And was in, not... Different guy?
Kevin did the comic book, right, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Stuart, the writer, the director, then took it and wrote, Stuart Beatty wrote, Collateral, he wrote mm-hmm. the first Pirates of the Caribbean,
yep.
Which one do you prefer?
I say Caribbean. But I think either way, works.
I sound smarter though when I say Caribbean.
But I feel like Caribbean is. I feel like, you know, that's weird. I think I say Caribbean if I were going to visit. I go, I'm gonna take a cruise. Although I think ultimately the definitive pronunciation has to go to Billy Ocean. So I think you have to say Caribbean. So yeah, I think he actually.
Right.
Yeah, he would.
You really are a master.
Caribbean. It's not Caribbean Queen.
No, but he's Jamaican.
He is. He's Jamaican. Great music still.
Yeah.
In England.
He's in my iPod.
He is. But
he's a very small man.
So I crossed some wires.
No, you didn't. I just wasn't sure you were where you're going there. But Stuart, I think, wrote the script, and you know, the script. Obviously, the genesis is that book that you so decimated earlier, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
I did. I'm sorry. Well, I knew you guys broke up, and so I was
so rude. Yeah, but we created something great.
Good. Are you excited? And so you are excited about a movie like?
Yeah, I'm excited about. I had fun making it. You know, it's a. Do you really want to hear about this?
I do.
Yeah, I had fun making it. I worked my ass off, and everybody else did. The thing about movies that nobody understands, people don't. They do realize how hard it is to make a movie, you know, and how much effort and thought and passion goes into making a film. Every movie, just by virtue of the fact that it's made, even if it goes straight to video or whatever it is now, you know, I mean, there's so much love in there. That's a person's life. I want you guys to really think about that. Take a moment.
Okay, processed. Okay. I absorbed all of it.
Did you?
Just right there.
You have a better attitude now?
No, I do, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
But it is, I mean, like everything that you work on, no matter what the experience is, it's still going to leave a little trace with you along the way. And you've worked with fucking amazing. I mean, like, I didn't even get to tear your head open about Harvey Dent and Nolan and that experience.
Yeah.
And does a movie like that feel big when you're making it, or does it feel, you know, like with a director like that, does it feel like we're making a small movie that he's going to blow up somehow?
Well, there's two sides to that. I'll tell you quickly two stories about that. We were in Chicago making the film, and we were on top of a high rise at night, and there was Christian and Gary Oldman, and just the fact that to be in that company was fascinating, and, you know, in the bat suit and all that. And then there was lights in all of the city and all the buildings around. I mean, literally for as far as the eye could see. And I said to Chris, that's really cool, you know. I mean, it's going to look great with those lights there. They have the lights on. They didn't turn the lights off on the buildings. And Chris looks at me kind of like strangely, and he goes, that's us.
Oh, shit.
So they had lit. I mean, I'm talking like a entire city. They lit every specific light in a building. So when you see that shot, that's all us. On the other hand, so that's how big the movie is. I mean, forget the Batmobile and the biggest green screens in the world and all that. But on the first day of filming, there's a big, it's the scene in the restaurant when Christian comes up to Maggie and I. And, you know, after we did our scene or in between, nobody left. Nobody went to their trailers. Nobody. There was no real catering to speak of, you know, and everybody just stayed there. I was looking around. It was the first day of filming. I'm like, I'm looking at Christian going, is he going to go back to his trailer? How's this work? I go, where's craft services? You know. And that was the great thing, is that basically everybody stays on set all the time. And it's a real sort of family kind of thing. And Chris works very quietly, very methodically. And so in that way, it felt like a very small movie. You know, but it was an enormous film. And then you had Heath Ledger, who was, you know, what can you say? I mean, the guy's a genius, you know, who was so passionate about the movie. I mean, I was watching Gary Oldman watch Heath. Yeah. We all know what a genius Gary is, right? And Gary was sitting there going, you know, so it was quite extraordinary to be there. And then the tragedy that happened to Heath. And so I'm very happy to have been a part of that.
Well, I know you have to go, because this is probably one of 10,000 other things that you have to do today, but I Frankenstein comes out January 24th. And then anything else coming up?
I just finished a movie called Incarnate, in which I play a wheelchair bound. I'm a paraplegic in it. And, it's a Jason Blum film, so it's sort of a genre kind of film, but a lot of fun, and a great director named Brad Peyton directed it. And that's, I don't know when it's going to come out, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And then I'm going to go find some work.
I think you'll be just fine.
Yeah, I'm going to be David Spade's assistant.
Hey, Eckhart, over here. Beat the shit out of that guy for me. I said some shit. I can't cash the check. But
Aaron,
thanks, man.
Take back my car. I don't like the seat.
Tell Clint Eastwood I want to work with him. No, I already did that once. Please don't make me do that again. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Aaron Eckhart.
Thank you very much. A pleasure.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Carbonite is online backup made easy. Plans start at just $59.99 a year. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist to get 2 bonus months with purchase.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.